Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, Harrison was in my show, in my house yesterday, all right? I opened up my house to him. One, he, like, dissed my couch. He was like, the other couch was more comfortable, okay, that's Harrison, that's his personality. But then he said that, like, salsa, he is overrated. And I'm sitting here like, what is wrong with you?
I apologize to you for not raising him better. I've been busy doing my own thing, and it was a little absentee in his upbringing, and we see the rotten fruit of that.
So I asked him, like, how did these takes, like, come about? What happened when you were being raised? And he was like, oh yeah, my parents basically just let me cook for myself, and that makes total sense, right? Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. But I just couldn't believe, I've never heard somebody be anti-salsa.
Yeah, that's kind of a, like, guacamole. I love guacamole, but I can understand.
Yeah.
You know, like, someone that doesn't
somebody
like that.
Somebody might be
salsa,
allergic,
right?
To it, or, yeah.
Right. And, like, salsa, it comes in so many different flavors and,
yeah,
heat, you know, levels of heat and all that. Like, there is a salsa for everyone. See, we got to find Harrison his salsa. That's what it is.
He tried to, like, back up and say, well, it wasn't a salsa specific. Like, I don't hate salsa. I'm like, no. If you're willing to go out on a limb at all and crap on salsa, you hate salsa.
Yeah, that's true. So,
that's the rule. But we aren't going to talk about salsa all show. What we are going to talk about, though, I want to talk about this Dwayne Wade and LeBron thing. I was kind of surprised by how, I guess, moved I was by all of that.
Yeah.
I was surprised by that. Like, it was just kind of that right hook that you sometimes catch and you're just like, whoa, where'd that come from? So we're going to open up the show talking about the dynamic there. But the two main topics that regarding the Lakers that I really wanted to hit on today was Kuzma's playing really, really well. And it happens to coincide with, I think it started, to be completely fair, before Brandon Ingram got hurt. But he seems to really be keeping it going and moving in an even more positive direction. So I want to know maybe if there's a correlation there. And then whether or not Ingram should have his starting spot whenever he comes back, based on what we've seen from the starters so far. So not quite a big enough sample size, but it's stuff to talk about between 2 days between games. So let's start, though, with that. And by the way, tomsurban.com/lockedon. We'll see you guys there on Thursday. So the Lakers put together that video for Wade. Lakers fans give him a standing ovation. And then at the end of the game, the guys exchange jerseys. They have that interview. I don't know if you were able to see the interview with LeBron and Wade and Dennis Scott.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised by how touched I was by that entire scene. I thought the Lakers handled it perfectly, and then those guys handled it as well as you would expect.
Yeah, this is an example of what the Lakers as an organization are best at. Like, I feel like the Lakers get it, and that's hard to quantify in a lot of ways. But just something like Dwayne Wade is an all-time great, a first ballot, no doubt, a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
And just a nod to that greatness. And so many greats have walked through Staples and through the fabulous form, as Chick used to call it back in the day, that I – you know, someone like Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka is Kobe Bryant's agent, LeBron himself, just from the top down, they have a respect and understanding for what it means to be one of the all-time greats and what it means to be around somebody like that on a day-to-day basis. If other teams, you know, I don't follow Miami closely enough to know this, but if other teams aren't giving Dwayne Wade tributes, they should be.
Yes.
Because he is one of the great players of his generation and of all time. And I always loved how he went about his business, how hard he played. He's a guy that I think is a guy to look up to on a lot of levels. And I'm really glad the Lakers did that.
I thought it was also particularly endearing, given the fact that, like, so when LeBron retires, what will you think? Like, do you know what you're going to think of him as? Do you think you'll think of him as a Cav, a Laker? Probably not a Laker, a Miami Heat?
I mean, my fondest memories will almost certainly be as a Laker, yeah, right?
Probably.
Right, for obvious reasons. But I think, like, I'll always associate him with the Cavs, right? Like, he came in as... This happens so rarely in sports. He came in as like the most hyped guy ever, mm-hmm. and he hit and exceeded those expectations, yeah. wow. and the hype, you know? And so him doing that and then going back to Cleveland, mm-hmm. of all cities, and winning a title, especially the way that they won, where they came back from the 3-1 deficit. And mm-hmm. it's actually been funny. I tweeted last night, you know, if you haven't had LeBron James on your team, I highly recommend it. And there were a bunch of like Warriors fans like, it's cool, my team's beaten him 3 times. And it's like, you're comparing like a stacked all-time team with like a bunch of superstars, yeah. and all-stars to like one dude. That kind of speaks to the level of greatness that LeBron is, right? And the fact that was the only time, and you know, this is not Lakers related necessarily, but the only time that it was a somewhat fair fight between LeBron and the Warriors, LeBron's team won, mm-hmm. right? In 15, Kyrie and Love got hurt early on in the series. I think it was game 1. And then they beat them in 16. The Cavs beat the Warriors in 16. And then the last 2 seasons, you have 2 superstars and then 2 all-stars next to them. Like, yeah, like, but the only time it was even close to a fair fight was the year that LeBron and the Cavs won. And so I'll always associate him as a Cav. How about you? How do you see
him? I think I will too. I mean, his most memorable moment is going to be as a Cav, right? That series, this is for you, Cleveland and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it was like even a slight hesitation back there, mm-hmm. like I just think for the Lakers, they value loyalty above just about everything else. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've criticized them for the Kobe Bryant contract, that last one, the 2-year, $48 million deal thing. Mm-hmm. Now there's some revisionist history here going where now we're giving him credit for it and saying that it and there might be stuff to this, but you know, it's kind of funny. I think as it pertains to Dwayne Wade, somebody who just, there is no question about it. He is Miami Heat. He is Miami.
Yeah.
I think that in particular makes the Lakers even more happy to honor the guy, because mm-hmm. that's the kind of career that I think even though he left, he went to Chicago and then he went to Cleveland, but he came back. And I think in coming back to or going back to Miami, it even further hammered home how much that city means to him and how much he means to that city. And I think that I thought it was perfect that the Lakers recognize that with Wade, and I thought they did a really good job. And this, by the way, is the kind of thing, like I kind of joked a second ago about Kobe's contract, but the way that they honored Wade, that kind of thing reverberates around the league. That these stars want to be treated as such, and Wade was,
and that was always. I totally understand your perspective on the last Kobe contract. But that is in the same vein as something like this, mm-hmm. right? Like the Lakers during that period of time probably needed to be bad for a few years to get high picks, and because they didn't draft anyone worth a damn after Bynum for nearly a decade. Mm-hmm. And
well, you know, where's this Kareem Rush slander coming from?
And with the exception of Marcus Gasol, right? Mm-hmm. And he ended up getting moved for Powell. But so in that whole, like, the Lakers are very player friendly. And like, what does that actually mean? It's not just a matter of respect. It's a matter of like trying to help you build your brand and trying to legitimately help you, not just extract whatever value we can get from you. And whether it's a tribute to Dwayne Wade or like the genius talks that they have or the work that they do in terms of like coordinating, you know, Pelinka does it with the entertainment industry and all of that, mm-hmm. like it's all like in the same family of things. And yeah, just to me, that tribute last night was right in line with all that.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was really well handled by everybody. I wish Dennis Scott would have kept kind of pushing LeBron because he looked like he was getting ready to tear up a little bit. But but
that would have been great.
Yeah, I'm picking nits. All right, so we're going to take a quick second, and when we come back, we're going to focus back on the Lakers and the actual basketball that they're playing. Kuzma deserves a ton of credit from what he's showing. Today's show is brought to you in part by Action Heat. I was dumb enough to sign up. The Lakers are playing the Boston Celtics in Boston in February, and I told a buddy of mine, a good friend of mine, lives out there in Boston, and I told him that we were going to fly out there and finally visit him in Boston, and because the Lakers are playing, I can go out there and say that it's for work, but that means I'm going to be in Boston in February, and I'm terrified about it. My wife is terrified about it, so we're going to go through Action Heat, and we are going to buy basically everything that they have to offer. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat, and I'm going to be using all of them. I'm going to see if I can buy extra panels. I might put a couple in my shoe. If you aren't using those heating panels, you can always charge your appliances with it, your phone, your iPad, whatever. So go to actionheat.com/lockedon, and you can save 20% off of your purchase. Again, that's actionheat.com/lockedon, or you can use the coupon code LOCKEDON and save 20%. Go check it out. It's great clothing. I can't wait to use it. I'm going to be entrusting my life with this clothing. So I want to again frame this by saying that Ingram and like Kuzma was starting to turn things around while Ingram was still around, right? He was starting to. I think it's gotten better. I think he's looked a little bit better. And one of the theories that I kind of have, I don't think it's an Ingram topic so much as it's a heart topic.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with this. Yes.
I think he just. You think of ways that he fits next to Kuzma. He wants to body guys up inside. He wants to get out and run. And one of the theories that you and I talked about a while back was this idea that you're only going to run as fast as the guy next to you, generally speaking, right? And Hart is going to get out and run on the break every opportunity he can. And mm-hmm. Kuzma's going to see that, and he's going to say, well, I got to do the same thing, or else I'm going to look like the lazy slow one here, right? And Ingram is a little bit more happy to kind of jog up the court and set up in half court and get ready for his next ISO. And I just think all of these things have kind of come together. And while Kuzma deserves the lion's share of the praise for the way that he's playing, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's taking place right now with Hart in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think to the degree that it's taking place, right? Him averaging 25 or whatever it is over his last few games, he's getting a higher volume because Josh Hart is perfectly fine taking five shots in a game. Mm-hmm. And because if those are the five shots that are open for him, he's going to play his hardest on defense, right? He can drive me nuts sometimes on the perimeter, but I feel like he's been better over the last few weeks on the defensive end. Lonzo is not going to dominate shot attempts. And same thing is true with JaVale or Chandler. So you have these two really clear-cut first option, second option, and everybody else is happy to play their role off of that. And not only within Kuzma's individual production, but those lineups are playing very well. These games are close because Lakers only have seven rotation caliber guys healthy right now. Mm-hmm. But if you look at like last night, the starting lineup played 12 minutes. They outscored Miami by 11 in that quarter's worth of action. And then the sit by two in the 6 minutes where it was Chandler instead of McGee. So that like core group of guys, that lineup is playing really well. And that's been true the entire season. Kuzma is, from an individual basis, he's slowing down a little bit, and Luke mentioned this last night as well. I feel like it's easier for a guy to slow down than it is for him to speed up. And so a lot of his floater game's ridiculous right now, man. Yeah. Like all of these shots off of the wrong foot, leaning one way after contact, it's just stupid how good it is. And it's the type of shot where the NBA defenses are geared to take that away. So if you're one of the few guys who's really good at it, you're going to be able to get it at high volume. I think he hit seven floaters against Memphis. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Yeah. That's absurd. And so, it's a combination of, I think, both opportunity, circumstance, and Kuzma starting to become more comfortable in his role and knowing what he can do. And we've seen an emergence on the defensive end and in his passing. It's not, and even his rebounding. It's not just as a scorer. He's just been just wonderful recently.
I think I like that you and Luke pointed out that it seems that the game is slowing for him, because that allows him now, like, if you feel like you're playing too fast, if you feel like you have to sprint through everything and you have to really try to get your shot off as quickly as you possibly can, like, that takes an additional amount of energy from just playing your normal game. And I think that by being able to slow down and understanding that he can still be successful while slowing down, well, that gives him a little bit more energy on the other end too, to be able to help out all over the court. I've been very impressed by the way that his season seems to be coming together here. So much so that I think what it really comes down to is, okay, how do we make sure that Kuzma gets the more minutes here alongside LeBron than just about anybody, maybe even not named Josh Hart.
Yeah, and Luke's done a good job of tying their minutes together. I think right now, with the situation of having only those seven healthy guys, like, ideally two of Lonzo, Kuzma, and LeBron are on the court at any given time. Now, Lonzo obviously is not producing at the level of the other two, but there's a certain degree of organization that comes with a guy like him, that when you see those lineups without those guys on the court, it's like, oh, let's just hang on for these couple minutes until they can. And they usually don't, right? Like, they usually get outscored by five.
The narrator's like, they have
right,
not.
Right. And, but Kuz had an interesting quote the other day when someone asked him about his passing, right? His assist. It wasn't in this most recent game against Miami, but all told, his assists have really gone up. And the thing that struck me, that caught my attention, was he said, I know my scoring is going to be there. And I wonder how much of an impact, like, so both Kuzma and Ingram are young, and they're going to want to score their, you know, 15 to 20 to 25 points per game whenever they can. And knowing that he's going to get his shot attempts, I wonder how much that has impacted his passing game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's a good idea. I like the theory.
You know, and because if he's just making the right pass next to another guy that's taking 13 to 15 shots, there are going to be some times where the right amount of shots for him to take were like 8 or 9 shots, and you're not going to score that 15 plus points per game on that. I think you could say the same thing of Ingram. It would actually be interesting. Not that I would want this to happen, of course, but it would be interesting if the opposite happened, where Kuzma was out for a bit. Would we see more of Ingram's passing game, because he would know that he had those opportunities no matter what, rather than, like, I guess my main question is, are they competing for touches, for that, those second option touches? And when they're together, like, do they both pass less as a result of that?
I don't even think that's a question. They almost literally are. I mean, when they're playing alongside LeBron James, you are going to be competing for touches there. Right. I think that you hit the nail on the head there. And you know, that's easily fixable by just moving Ingram to the bench. But we'll see. You know what? Perfect time to segue. We're going to talk. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Mazuma. Mazuma USA has been just incredible with helping me through organizing my finances and understanding how to keep those maintained while this show continues to grow. And we are getting ready. My wife and I are getting ready to move, probably in like the February, March kind of region, which, now that I think about it, we're going to Boston. Boy, February is going to suck. But what that means, though, is that I have to make sure that I have everything situated so that I can save up if we need to put a down payment or whatever. We're going to be all set up and organized for when that time comes. And it's thanks in large part to what Mazuma has been able to teach me and help me learn how to maintain all this stuff. They have CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants all here in the U.S., all within a single call, text, email away. So give them a call at 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926. And you can figure out which package. They start at $75 a month. Makes the most sense for your small business. Again, that's 213-947-6926. That's Mazuma. Your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and Callie is sleeping right downstairs right now, and she's doing that. If I just leave her alone for a bit, she'll howl here in the next minute or so. See, that'd be great if it picks up here on the show. Hey, by the way, we're recording. Let's start though. It's always tough, and one of the things I didn't get it on the podcast, but one of the things when we were all sitting there watching the game at Spectrum, that I wanted to make sure I ask both Candace Parker and James Worthy was, how do they feel about players losing their starting job because of an injury, right? Not coming back and having that starting spot available. Both of them are Hall of Famers, so I don't think they really ever had to worry about it very much.
Sure, right.
So I think it was kind of tough for them to be able to put themselves into that kind of frame of mind. But they both did kind of, you know, it was certainly an unwritten rule, right? I remember when Colin Kaepernick took over for Alex Smith because of Alex Smith's injury. That was a big topic of conversation. Now, starting quarterback is a little different because you now lose out on all of your playing time when you're not starting as a quarterback, whereas like Ingram would go to the bench and I think he would still get a decent sized role for the Lakers. But how do you feel about guys losing their voice? How do you feel about guys losing their gigs because they miss time due to injury?
Well, I think it's a guideline rather than a rule. I mean, it's happened enough in sports where, like, this was a topic of conversation before he got hurt, was it not?
It was. I mean, that's why you and I talked about it right when he got hurt.
And the injury provides an opportunity to see what would happen, or a rough approximation if that were to happen. And I feel like in situations like that, where it's where there's some question beforehand about who should be starting, then once upon a time was a 49er fan. I remember exactly when Kaepernick took over for Alex Smith, and Alex Smith was a guy who, he was a solid game manager type quarterback, right? But he was not a guy that was really embraced by 49er fans. And So when a guy like that goes down, and Kaepernick was very dynamic and helping the team put a lot more points on the board, end up leading them to a Super Bowl, that was something where it was like, yeah, I mean, it's justifiable. In this circumstance, the lineups that have played the four most minutes, the five man groups that played the most minutes, all really align with this argument, right? And with this discussion that we're having. One of them, you've got LeBron, Kuzma, Lonzo, and JaVale with Ingram, right? That group's played the most minutes, 234 minutes, barely positive net rating of plus 0.2. Same group of four, right? LeBron, Kuz, Lonzo, and JaVale. But with Hart in Ingram's place, that goes from that 0.2 to 10.7 in 107 minutes, right? Now, we all know that JaVale and Tyson Chandler kind of split minutes. And so when you replace JaVale with Chandler, and you've got LeBron, Lonzo, Kuzma, and Chandler with Ingram, you've got a positive net rating of 3.1 in 56 minutes. When you do the same thing, but with Josh Hart in Ingram's place, you got a plus 31.2 in 35 minutes, right? Now, we're starting to get to a lower sample, but those are the four lineups that have played the most amount of number of minutes. I am contradicting myself a little bit because you asked me on the last episode I was on, what are the chances of Ingram losing his starting job? And I said less than 10% or 10%-ish. After giving it some thought, I do think it's going to be the right move to make. We've seen enough of that group. And even from a conceptual standpoint, it makes sense. There's also a way to do it where you're not relegating Ingram to 16 minutes per game, right? The Lakers have nine, when everyone's healthy, they have nine legitimate rotation caliber players. You've got the current starters right now, Ingram, Rondo, KCP, and Tyson Chandler coming off of the bench. When you go to a 10-man rotation, that's when you start having Lance in the rotation or Beasley. I think we would agree there's a drop-off after those nine from, you know what I mean? So to me, a 9-man rotation in which LeBron, Kuzma, and Ingram split the forward minutes, there's 96 minutes.
96 minutes.
Right. So you could, everybody could play 32 minutes, mm-hmm. right? LeBron's going to play 34. Kuz will probably play, 32. So that would leave 30 left for Ingram. And depending on the game, it could be Hart closing, it'd be Ingram. You know, it could be both of them and Lonzo on the bench, right? Like that could vary. But I think that's like shortening the rotation to 9 men and having Ingram take both of those backup spots while still playing high 20s, low 30s in minutes and still being able to close games when appropriate. I think that's the way you get the best production where everybody's getting enough minutes, but nobody's getting too many minutes to burn out. And so that's, I think, the right way to handle it, because this 5-man grouping where it's LeBron, Lonzo, Kuzma, Hart, and one of the bigs, they play really, really well together. And it's a lot better than when it's Ingram in that place. Does that mean that Ingram's a better player than Hart? Not necessarily, but the fit is better. I'm going to contradict what I said last week. And I do think that's the right move to make.
I don't think you're quite contradicting yourself, though. I mean, we both said that, like, if the play backs up what the numbers were telling us going into this opportunity for Josh Hart, that would be the only situation, if it was loud enough, and I think it's been loud enough, in my opinion, that this is the one circumstance where we could see it. And we also said it depends on how long Ingram is out. We haven't really gotten an update. We'll get that tomorrow is when the Lakers practice again. We might hear a little bit more about how Ingram is holding up and what's the deal with Rondo. But yeah, what it comes down to, too, the other factor to keep in mind here is that Luke relies really heavily on his starters. That you mentioned the four lineups that have played the most together this year. The starting lineup of Lonzo, Kuzma, Ingram, James, and JaVale, they've played, is it still double the amount of the second most
played? Yeah. 234 versus 107, so a little more than double.
Yeah, and so if he's going to rely that heavily on that lineup, it has to be your best lineup. It just has to be. And so far, it's pretty clearly the one with Hart. Now, you never know how these things are going to go. And usually, I think Cran just said that you want about 500 minutes of lineup data before you really start jumping to really major conclusions here. I think mm-hmm. that seems kind of high. But even still, the more that Josh Hart plays against opposing starters, the more that story is going to become a little bit more complete. But I don't know, man. It seems just like it's not just a data thing either. It's just a fit thing. You and I talked earlier about Josh Hart and how he kind of unleashes Kyle Kuzma and the way that their games fit each other. And it just happens to fit alongside LeBron James, who is the most important player on the roster. So
if this were to happen, Anthony, how do you think Ingram would take it?
I've been thinking about that a lot. Let me know if you disagree, feel free, but Ingram to me seems like the quiet type who would say who would take it as a challenge. Like, I think D'Angelo Russell was a lot more immature and took it as a personal slight when he was taken out of the starting lineup. Julius Randle, I wouldn't say that he was as immature as D'Angelo Russell, but same kind of thing. He was kind of like F you then, right? I feel like Ingram, though, everybody in the organization talks about the kid's work ethic. And I think he would see it as a bit of a challenge in a more positive way, though that might be wishful thinking on my part. I don't know. What do you think?
I do think he would take it as a challenge. I don't know if it would be in a positive way. I think he'd be pissed off. And yeah. Now, is that the end of the world? Is that
That's the thing. Is the only guy that you cannot piss off is LeBron.
Right, right.
So
right. Like, I don't think anyone else has the cachet to be able to do it. The one thing I will say is, in a real practical sense, I don't think Kuzma is going back to the bench. No. And that's something that, like, that was his role at the beginning of the season. That was what was designed at the beginning. But with as well as he gels with LeBron, I think LeBron would be the first person, well, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
If that were to happen. So yeah. I do think this is an Ingram versus Hart type of thing. And you're talking about very different types of players, right, despite playing similar positions. So, I don't think Ingram would be happy with that. I also think there's a way to get him his minutes and get him closing when, you know, whenever appropriate. And, you know, that's the if starting is that, like, we can't be having our starting lineup built around the feelings of yes, a 21-year-old who thank hasn't you. played well enough to justify it.
Yeah.
To put it in plain English, that's really what it comes down to. So if we'll see. Brandon's going to be out a little bit longer. You know, they always underreport these injuries. That I saw that injury happen right in front of me at the game. And when they were like, yeah, when they were like day to day, I'm like, nah, that's not a day to day ankle sprain. No. That's he's going to be out a couple weeks.
His ankle touched the floor.
Right, right. And so I'm not expecting him back for another couple weeks. So we will know more. I think that the argument for Hart will either be stronger or not as strong. We'll have more data basically by that point and be able to make a more informed decision than right now. But that lineup's been very good. It's been very good all year. And it's not 500 minutes, but we're approaching 200 minutes with, you know, when you alternate the bigs. Mm-hmm. So whether it's with or Chandler, right? And so is that, I don't know, to me it's a big enough difference and it's a noticeable enough difference. And conceptually it makes sense yes. that LeBron with better floor space, like the Lakers already have one guy in Lonzo. And maybe there's an argument to be had that Ingram should be in Lonzo's spot. Lonzo should go to the bench. I don't think that that's the case because I think Lonzo does more outside of scoring than Ingram does to help, and he's their primary screen setter. A lot of their plays work.
That would also throw the rotation out of whack.
For sure, right. You got Rondo and Lonzo on the bench, right. Mm-hmm. So it's not an argument I would make, but I would understand that. But the Lakers already have one guy who draws a questionable amount of defensive attention is from in Lonzo, right, both as a finisher and as a shooter. Teams will play off of Ingram as well on the offensive mm-hmm. end. And the funny thing is the Lakers have actually been better defensively, and Ingram's been good individually, but they've been better defensively when it's Hart instead of Ingram too. Mm-hmm. So we'll know more in a couple of weeks, but I think things are trending in that direction. I also don't think that Luke makes that move.
If I would not handle it very well. If,
I know.
I would not be a pleasant person to watch that first game with in that kind of situation. All right, last thing here that I wanted to talk about, and Harrison and I got into it on the Silver Screen podcast yesterday, and I wanted to carry the conversation over to this one here. This is about I hadn't planned on talking about it. We don't have to stay on this very long, but Lonzo's finishing. I think it all starts with his lack of confidence at the free throw line. Is that too reductivist, or is that?
I think it is. I think he's got some like real legit technical. Like I think it's part of it. Don't get me wrong. I think that's absolutely the case. But he's got some real heavy technical issues that go beyond just like I'm going to draw contact here. Mm-hmm. That. I don't know, man. He's such a weird prospect. Like, my buddy Mario tweeted last night, and I thought it was brilliant, that he's either like the worst great player I've ever seen or the best terrible player I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And it just like nails it perfectly. And so yeah, I understand your point, and I do think that that's a factor, but like, that's not the only thing. Like, he had an uncontested layup thing. Right last night. Yeah. And I know that's not what you're saying. Yeah. But that uncontested layup last night that he biffed, like, he did that because he jumped off of 2 feet, or he tried to jump off of 2 feet. He's a right-handed player that's uncomfortable jumping off of his left foot to make a right-handed layup. That is the most basic thing. You learn that when you're like 10.
I think that's like the maybe first young. Thing they teach you.
It's like the first thing, maybe second, like when you're little, you'll learn how to jump stop and shoot an overhand layup, right? But the second thing, like, and once you get old enough to shoot an underhanded layup off of 1 foot, it's like the first thing you learn.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's not comfortable doing that, like, I don't even know what to make of it. I always say, like, the optimistic standpoint is like, well, you can teach 10-year-olds this, so it's easy. And then the obvious pessimist is like, well, then why hasn't he learned it yet?
Right. Yeah.
So I do see where you're coming from on that. I just think it extends well beyond just that.
The thing that the reason that theory holds even more weight in my mind is he has incredible instincts everywhere else on the court. He's a very instinctual player defensively, offensively. He's really good at making these snap decisions that come from being able to see the floor right before he catches the ball, and he makes those great decisions there. And yet he goes completely stupid driving to the basket. He makes these weird decisions driving to the basket that he wouldn't make anywhere else. And I really think it comes down to, if I get fouled here, I got to go and make these free throws, and I don't think I can do that. And I don't think it's like that's all the math he does in his head there. But it, like that play last night where he gets by Goran Dragic, right? He had his shoulder completely by him. He also is about 4 inches taller than Dragic, and yet stopped, pivoted back, and shot a fadeaway going away from the basket. And I'm just thinking, anybody else who is as smart as Ingram or as Lonzo is would have gotten that front shoulder back, sealed him, and gotten to the rim. But I don't think he's interested in that kind of thing. Maybe he doesn't have the technique to do it, but he just doesn't look interested in doing that kind of thing.
You know, the more I watch Lonzo, I want to reframe this slightly, because I do think there's a lot of validity in what you're saying. But we very much, and in a lot of ways rightfully so, characterize Lonzo as being a smart player. I think that there's a distinction between instincts and smarts. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he feels the game really well, but mm-hmm. I think that gets him in trouble in that. So, savant, for example,
kind of thing.
Yeah, in that, like, I don't think he... This is a weird... I hope people understand this and know that I'm a total Lonzo stan, but I don't think he knows the game very well. I think he feels the game really well. Like, so for example, that turnover that he had in transition where he tried the behind the back pass, like he made up his mind to do that well before he actually did it. Mm-hmm. The right play was just going up himself and dunking the ball or making a layup. And I think he guessed that the defender was going to catch up to him, he'd dump it off to the guy that would keep trailing, and it would get a highlight trailer dunk. But I think he feels those things rather than actually looking at the defense and in real time processing, like, okay, this means that I'm going to do that. Like, even coming off of pick and rolls, you'll see him overpass because he'll, like, feel like, oh, I should make the skip pass here, when in reality, it's a dump off to the big or it's a shot for himself. And I think that, like film work, you know, shock that I think that'd be important. But I think that, like, he actually needs to learn the game a little bit better because he tries to anticipate what's going to happen rather than reading a defense and understanding what's going to happen. If that distinction.
Yeah, no, it totally does. Now my wheels are spinning now, wondering whether or not that would help or hurt him, right? Because if he plays based off of feel and then now starts trying to overthink things, that can sometimes throw people off. That I'm going down a rabbit hole now. We should get out of here.
Let's do it. Let's see everyone at Tom's Urban, man, on Thursday.
Yeah, that sounds great. By the time we all get together again, or by the time I see you next, we'll be at Tom's Urban watching the Lakers take on Houston. Again, check out tomsurban.com/lockedon for exclusive details and offers that you guys can get there. Even right now, you guys can, if you guys are just going tonight, sign on to tomsurban.com/lockedon and get yourself some free cheaper food. Pete, I'll talk to you on Thursday.
Sounds good, man. See you then. That'll be a good time.